Hi, you're listening to On the Point, the News Collective's weekly news report, formerly known as Democracy Watch, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs coverage from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Isa Yu.
I'm Zachary Tharp.
I'm Garmon Gill.
I'm Alex DeBoer. It's Thursday, January 9th at 5.04 p.m. We're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
So, if you're familiar with our show, you might notice the new name. It's a new year, and with a new decade, we at the News Collective have decided to rebrand with two new coordinators, Isa and I, a new name and a fresh new outlook on news in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. Over the next few episodes, we will be introducing more additions, so stay tuned.
So we have a show for you today. Adeline Pang, who sat down with some U-Hill Elementary School students, recorded their discussion on their preparations for the first LEGO League Robotics First. Here is an acronym. Anyway, let's take a listen.
Listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Adeline Pang. Over the last few months, I've been helping to coach a local elementary school team as they prepare for the first LEGO League Robotics Competition, or FLL. FIRST is an acronym for the name for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology, a global nonprofit that encourages youth to engage in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM. Specifically, the first LEGO League allows kids ages 9 to 14 to participate in challenges based on specific themes. The challenges involve STEM skills such as problem solving, research, coding, and engineering. Since FLL is a partnership between FIRST and the LEGO Group, teams complete missions using LEGO Mindstorms to build and program robots. They also propose research-backed solutions to theme-based problems, culminating in an innovation project to be presented at the competition. Throughout the challenge, FLL encourages kids to develop core values such as teamwork, discovery, and innovation. This year's theme is called City Shaper. It introduces architecture as a combination of art and science, as well as various roles that form a design team. City Shaper challenges kids to consider city-related issues, such as transportation, accessibility, and natural disasters. This is done through the robot's interaction with physical structures on a challenge mat. The missions involve modifying a city so that its structures are stable, accessible, sustainable, and beautiful. It's also addressed by the Innovation Project, with proposed solutions to problems with buildings or public spaces in the community. Recently, two members from the Starscrapers team joined me in studio to discuss their experiences preparing for an upcoming FLL qualifier this weekend. Let's take a listen. Thanks for coming in to chat with me today. To start off, would you mind introducing yourself, what grade you're in, and which elementary school you're from?
Hi, I am Dadaning Gray in grade 4 at U-Hill Elementary.
Hi, I'm Abdurrahman Abdulhamid in grade 4 at U-Hill Elementary.
Awesome. So how did you become interested in joining the team?
I did LEGO Robotics after school in a club in grade 2. We had teams and competitions, and I liked coding, constructing, and teamwork. Abdurrahman told me about the team, and I was excited to join.
I came in the team by finding a paper about FLL. I signed up for the U-Hill team and became part of the team.
Sounds interesting. And what impact has FLL had on you while preparing for the competition?
I learned about new sensors like the ultrasonic sensor. I also learned some code. This sensor helps the robot check the distance of how close it is to a wall, hand, arm, everything.
I learned how to code with Lego Mindstorms, such as using the sensors.
That sounds very cool. So what was your experience with the teamwork part of FLL?
Our teamwork is natural. We listen to each other. This has been my first time on a small team working on a complex project over a period of months.
It takes a lot of teamwork in FLL. The team finds ways working together, such as seeing who has the best idea or voting.
It seems like you've all learned a lot through this challenge. How has your team adapted to differences between team members, such as age, interests, and skill differences?
Age difference is not the most important factor. What matters the most is interest, experience, and effort. Sometimes we take a little extra time, but we complete the mission.
We put the team members in the best job for them, such as Suman, Danar, and Haley working on the innovation project more than myself and Miles.
That sounds wonderful. So thanks for taking the time to come talk about FLL today. Best of luck at the qualifier, and I hope you have a great week. Thanks for listening. This piece was reported and produced by Adeline Ping. Special thanks to Team Starscrapers, their parents, mentors, and coaches, and CITR 101.9 FM.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg. And I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Come in, Grey Badger. Begin your report, Eva. Come in, Grey Badger. Begin your report, Eva. Come in, Grey Badger. Begin your report, Eva. Come in, Grey Badger. Begin your report, Eva.
On Friday, January 17th, CITR 101.9 FM presents our annual 24 hours of radio art programming.
We don't go too far. None of us will go too far. Maybe sometimes we went too far, but now we won't, because we're real nice guys.
It's a full day of spoken word, drone, field recordings, sound collage, thunderphonics, robocalls, voicemail fails, sound art, and noise. CITR's 24 Hours of Radio Art, January 17th. Listen live or online at citr.ca.
Benedeit ist die Frucht deines Leibes, Jesus, der wiederkommen wird, zu richten Lebende und Tote.
Heilige Maria, Mutter Gottes, bitte für uns Sünder, jetzt und in der Stunde
unseres Todes. Amen. Gegrüßet seist du, Maria, voll der Gnade.
Welcome back. You are listening to On the Point on CITR 101.9 FM. We just had a few technical difficulties involving the mics, so you should be able to hear us a bit better now. So we're going to go on to the headlines, Gurman.
Thank you, Isa. This Monday, TransLink unveiled its brand new rapid bus system. The new buses are designed to be 20% faster than the standard local buses, and they do so by having less stops and opening at all the doors. At the peak times, the bus should run every 3 to 10 minutes and will run every 8 to 15 minutes than the other times. The bus should run from 6 a.m. to midnight. And one of the buses actually terminates here at UBC, goes through 41st Avenue to the Joyce Collingwood Station. I know that this rapid bus would be useful for people like me. I took the 41st Avenue bus for all of first year, and it was ugly. Yeah. Like they would just stop at the most random places, and it was really weird in the mornings, just like having to stop for like one or two people every block, and it was just agonizing. I'm glad to see that TransLink actually like took the time and found a more efficient route to help with people going to UBC on their daily commute. Maybe next year I'll actually like consider taking the bus again now that it's actually fixed to some extent. I remember racing the 41st Avenue Rapid Bus like the other day, and like I barely beat it by my car. So it's like it is pretty fast this time around.
Yeah, and Zachary, you know, you mentioned you take the bus a lot and you have a lot of thoughts about our public transportation system. What do you think?
I would say, I want to reiterate, they're good thoughts, not just thoughts in general, but these thoughts. I would say I want the double-decker buses to come out to UBC. That'd be pretty cool, nice little novelty. But obviously the main one is the SkyTrain to UBC, but that is years away. Maybe I might have gray hair before that comes in, but I would definitely look forward to that day. For now, I normally take the 4. It's a pretty good bus, except I have like a habit of showing up within like a minute after it passes. So, you know, I like to hang out at the bus stop for 15-20 minutes for the next one. And but the 99 is always really good. So maybe they'll replace that with some new signs. We get to see when the bus is going to be there. But, yeah.
Is the 99 already a rapid bus, technically?
There are express ones, but I think there are also normal ones.
Yeah, that's my question. What's the difference?
So the difference is that from what I understand, so I might be completely wrong, but the rapid buses or the express buses have less stops. And like the routes are designed so that they're just faster.
Right, but the 99 has like not that many stops.
Yeah, I think it's more of just really a branding thing.
Yeah,
like the rapid bus is pretty much taking the model of the 99B line and just like expanding on that.
Yeah, it's just funny because when I was hearing about them, I was like, well, I just take the 99 to get here. And I was like, is this considered a rapid bus or not?
I believe like they actually renamed all the other B lines except for the 99 to like so that like the rapid bus are considered like B line buses, and all the other ones aside from the 99 have been like renamed to not be B line buses anymore. It's all just a really weird branding thing, but yeah.
For rapid. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
The new signs where it shows like in real time. They have like the real time signs and everything, so that's a bit more efficient. So instead of just like eyeballing it and hoping that it shows up on that time, you can see on like an electronic board, it's like, oh, this one's going to be here at this time, this one's going to be here at this time, and it can be changed with traffic and whatnot.
Don't you guys like text the bus stop?
Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I still do that. And there's also the transit app, which is like pretty good.
Yeah,
so there are some ways around it, but it is definitely nice having those real-time signs.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how they would pay for that though, because like where is the money coming from? That's always the question.
Yeah, that would be good to look into.
We'll get in on that, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get on that.
But yeah, thank you, Garmon, for this. Mm-hmm. And on to Alex.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the acquisition of the Georgia Strait. So most people have probably heard, although it's hard to keep kind of updated and engaged in local news when, you know, all this stuff is happening internationally and people are dying and there's the threat of war and whatnot. But let's bring it back to the local. And here in the local front, a local newspaper was sold to a media company. I believe the sale was made on December 5th, or it was earlier this week that the papers were signed. So basically, the Georgia Strait, which is a free weekly alternative newspaper in Vancouver, was sold for $1.2 million. So that's not very much money, but it was sold. And it's been around. This is a big deal because the Georgia Strait has been an independent free weekly newspaper for 52 years. It started in 1967. It's a pretty respected paper, though. I mean, there are definitely criticisms I read on Twitter about the publication, and it's changed over the years as the market has gotten harder and harder for papers of any kind to make a profit and stay afloat. So they've had to increase advertisement and stuff like that. But the paper still does a lot of really important local journalism. That's a fact. I've seen, when people dismiss the Georgia Strait as just a rag that has theater reviews and sex ads, I mean, it has that, but it also definitely has local news coverage. They cover City Hall. They cover local elections. So say what you will, it still does some important work in the city in keeping people informed. And it has a really high pickup rate. Like most of the papers they distribute across Vancouver and the Lower Mainland get picked up, like physically picked up the papers. Their audience is 4.5 million readers. So I think that is both online and in print. But so they have quite a wide readership. So when I heard about this, I think it was on Monday, maybe Tuesday of this week, I was getting ready for work and listening to the news. I think I was listening to CBC, probably the early edition. And I heard that the Georgia Strait was sold. And I was like, immediately faced with all this anxiety because, I mean, not only is this a longtime institution that's remained independent, but we recently had another local paper shut down. So I'm very concerned about local journalism. And so it made me think about how just a couple months ago in mid-November, Torstar, which is the company that owns free daily papers across in major cities across Canada, called Star Metro Papers. So we had the Star Metro Vancouver. And this company also owns the Toronto Star, and it's called Torstar. Yeah. So the company Torstar declared an end to its free daily metro newspapers across Canada. So that's in the cities Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, and Halifax. So the company said, we're going to stop making these, and they're going to no longer be available starting December 20th. So it's been a few weeks. We haven't had them anymore. They're done. So ending these free dailies is really horrible. And some of the reasons for that is that now local news, there's less local news being covered. And people have less access to local news, meaning that people who can't afford to have a newspaper subscription, or people who don't have access to a computer or a smartphone on a regular basis, for example, homeless people, now they don't have a paper to read. They don't have that paper anymore. Luckily, there is still the Georgia Strait and the Vancouver Courier. We're actually pretty lucky in Vancouver compared to some other major Canadian cities. But yeah, now they don't have that news coverage. So it's a pretty big deal. And with the end of those free dailies, it also meant that 73 Torstar employees will be laid off. And I think at this point, they've already been laid off. But that's a lot of people in Canada losing their jobs. And 30 of those 73 are journalists. So on top of this sucking for all the reasons I just mentioned, it also sucks because Torstar had recently, in April of 2018, so just over a year ago, they had rebranded these free daily Metro papers, which were previously just called Metro. So they rebranded them to Star Metro, which I don't know. I remember when that happened. It was kind of a big deal. And they hired a bunch of journalists. And myself being a journalism school grad, it was like, sweet. Wow. Newspapers actually hiring. That basically never happens. All you hear about are layoffs, right? And papers closing in Canada. So it was a big deal. And it was a good opportunity. And I think one or two of my classmates actually got hired there. And Torstar, the company that owns Star Metro Vancouver, they were like boasting about how they were, while everyone else was laying people off and retreating from local journalism, they were in fact hiring journalists and funding more local journalism and funding investigative journalism. So now, just, you know, a year and a few months after they hire all these journalists, they rebrand these free local papers, Torstar reneges on all that, all those promises they made. And they fire these new journalists and shut down the free daily newspaper that they had rebranded. So that's cool. It's really cool. I should note, in fairness to Torstar, that, you know, it's the media environment is tough. And also, Torstar promised to hire, in the wake of these layoffs and the ending of these free daily papers, they promised to hire 11 journalists for new bureaus across those five cities, those five major Canadian cities I mentioned. And they are hiring these new journalists with the goal of producing digital content outside of Ontario. So basically, they're going to hire some people to produce local digital news across Canada, but it's not going to be as many journalists and it won't be available for free in print. So, and also if the journalists who are laid off, if they want to apply for those positions, like they have to apply instead of just transferring those positions to existing journalists, they're making people reapply, which is whatever. So anyway, this is the context in which I'm hearing about the Georgia Strait being sold. So that's part of the reason I was so anxious. So the company that bought the Georgia Strait, as I mentioned, bought it for only $1.25 million. So not very much. And they actually recently bought another free weekly alternative newspaper in Toronto called Now, which is another longtime alternative institution. And this company, which is scooping up Canada's alt-weekly papers, is called Media Central. Now, what is Media Central? What kind of company are they? Well, they have a little introduction on their website that I want to play for you so you can learn a bit about them. So let's hear that quickly.
Creative class. They are the tastemakers, the influencers, the agents of change and innovation. The true value of this exertive segment of the population has never been fully monetized until now. With the acquisition of Now Magazine, one of North America's top five alternative publications, and the entering into a binding letter of intent to purchase the iconic Georgia Strait of Vancouver, coupled with the commercialization of CanCentral.com, Media Central will capture the creative class by both building platforms in leading-edge segments and consolidating the over 100 alternative and independent weekly publications to ultimately influence those who shape key ideas, policies, and markets around the world.
All right, so that was a clip of Media Central, the company that purchased the Georgia Strait recently and just a couple months ago purchased Toronto's Now magazine. So I don't know, did anyone figure out what that ad said? Did that make sense? Is a better way of phrasing that question?
Like this, the Media Central ad?
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, for me personally, like, It used to me seemed like a lot of like it seemed very upbeat because you know it is a branding thing, but I don't know the logistics of actually making that media, if that makes sense. Like it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they used a bunch of buzzwords,
yeah,
right? So they
said.
Basically, they like I don't fully understand, but they're a company that is buying up. So they explicitly have the goal of. And I quote from a press release, purchasing up to 100 alternative papers in Canada and the U.S., each one serving its own community and uniting under one alternative umbrella. So the Toronto's Now and the Georgia Strait are the first two papers that they've bought. But they plan to buy, as it says, up to 100 more. So what they're doing is they also started a cannabis website. I have it written here. It's called CanCentral.com. So first of all, they started this website to promote cannabis products, and then they bought Now, and then they bought the Georgia Strait. And the Georgia Strait also has an online cannabis branch. They're already doing a bunch of like cannabis promotion. There's a lot of money in cannabis, I guess, and promoting that market and, you know, getting people to buy cannabis products and growing that market because it, you know, was obviously just legalized. So, basically, Media Central, from what I understand, is buying like alternative newspapers and then fusing them. So they intend to keep the local content, the local journalists, and like what makes them special and unique, but then also fusing them with some of their own cannabis advertising and, you know, industry promotion more generally. I'm not sure specifically, but so the reason that the publisher... and the founder, at least, Dan McLeod, I heard him on CBC's Early Edition talking about this. He says that he's gotten offers to buy the Georgia from different companies to buy the Georgia Strait over the years. And while financially the Georgia Strait hasn't been doing well, as again, very few newspapers, especially independent newspapers, are doing well in this media climate. The reason he decided to go with the Media Central offer was because he saw that they would retain the and preserve the sort of integrity of the newspaper and allow it to keep doing what it already does. So, I mean, I really hope he's right about that, of course. Dan McLeod was pretty taken with the publisher, Brian Kalish, who runs Media Central. He said that none of the offers he's had made previously made sense. And he says of Brian Kalish, and I quote here, here is a man who not only respects our city, but understands the contributions the Georgia Strait has made to local independent journalism and the cultural lives of our readers. So he remains optimistic that the Georgia Strait will keep doing what it's doing. So in the end, this anxiety I felt over the Georgia Strait being sold, I'm not sure if it, seen what will happen and whether it was merited. But maybe this is a good thing. Maybe if they hadn't bought it up, maybe if Media Central hadn't bought it up, the paper would have just run into the ground, run out of money, had less and less good content. I don't know. Or maybe we'll see slowly the Media Central will start changing the way the Georgia Strait reports, start taking up more space from their local news coverage and putting more product placement. Like, I don't know. But I think it's a really, really important local news story to follow. So the remaining papers, basically in Vancouver now, in terms of local news coverage for papers, you have the Vancouver Courier and the Georgia Strait. That's it now. If the Vancouver Courier ever goes under, like, we're done. They do probably the most local news coverage of any publication. Now we don't have the Star Metro. There's still, of course, more Canadian-focused news from Torstar available online. Some of it's free. So you can still get some content online, but there's none in a free paper format. And, anyway, our local media scene is what it is. There's still two papers, but I've told it's better than like in Calgary, for example. A friend is from there, and she said there's like basically no free newspapers or available like local journalism. But I'm just sort of saying what she repeated to me. That's not really founded on any research or anything. Anyway, so what do you, just to put it to the group, do either of you read any local newspapers?
I read Discorder.
Yeah, that's a good point. We shouldn't forget about our own.
Had to promote us, but also, do. Just more so since I've started doing the News Collective, I feel like this has been a really good way for me personally to learn about it, and so like through this collective I've gotten to find more sources about like local news, which was really good. So if any listeners go to UBC and want to join the News Collective, please come, we need members. But also I think from like my generation, like 18-year-olds, most people aren't reading newspapers, so I think it is inevitable in some ways that a lot of like paper newspapers will go out. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And it's a really good point. Like, you are really young, and when I was your age, I wasn't paying attention either, so, like, no judgment at all. When I was younger, I read my, like, newspapers my parents got sometimes, but then when I moved out, I didn't really. And just to the point of, you know, physical newspapers kind of, you know, ending as everything moves online, I think that that there's a big difference between putting a newspaper online and like ending it. So if they're just like, oh, we're transferring everything online, I still think there are major problems with that, because like I said, there's a, like, I see people reading those papers, those free dailies, all the time. Yeah. And there's a lot of people, like when I'm in the downtown east side, there's a lot of people who are homeless who are reading them, and like people who Not everyone has like a smartphone. Not everyone has access to a laptop or a computer all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like a really big accessibility issue. And so with the Star Metro Vancouver, not only did they kill the paper, they also fired the journalist. So like basically that content, most of that content, all the local stuff is gone now. So you can still find, the paper was fused with both local and national and international stories. So you can still find some of the national and international stories online, and a lot of it's free. Though, of course, there is like a limit to how many free articles you get, I think, like most newspapers do. But yeah.
When we were talking about this a few days ago, you had said something about also sex work and advertising in the newspapers. Can you expand a bit more on that if I'm not misremembering?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I haven't had a chance to educate myself enough about it. But like just in the peripheral, what I can say is that these alternative papers like Now in Toronto and Georgia Strait in Vancouver became a place where sex workers could safely advertise their services. And so we don't really know. And then again, people would complain that the papers also became a place just for sex work ads, or that would take up a huge part of the ad section. And so people will say like, oh, those are just like, those papers are just rags, whatever. Like they're not actually good, which is, you know, not true. But that's what I think is interesting too, is like, so, and I should say too, I actually did email Media Central to try and get an interview a few days ago. So like I've tried to reach out to them. I would love to talk to them more about their vision and exactly what changes they'll make. Like, will they keep those advertisements? I don't know what their revenue model is. Like, if they feel they can get enough money from just their cannabis investments that they're, you know, however they're advertising for cannabis products or promoting the industry, whoever's paying them to do that, maybe that's how they get their money and they no longer need to have all these advertisements. And maybe that opportunity will go away for sex workers. I don't know, but it would be great to know. Maybe they'll talk to me.
Yeah, hopefully, because we're, you know.
Yeah.
We're legit and professional.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. when I email people, they get back to me right away. It's like, oh, CITR? Heck yes.
Right. Thank you for that headline. So now we're going to go on and listen to some PSAs and ads.
Sweet.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/Discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at Discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Animals and pets, baby and nursery clothing and footwear, do-it-yourself, gardening, health aids, help.
So what I just love to do is love to trot very fast indeed, because otherwise it's not going to come out at all, and then when we put the pitch back to the normal position, it's going to come out reasonably again, only we hope at the same speed, so we'll have to try that now, although it will elongate the time, so therefore not on the dog.
Evening, 7-1 charge, 7 SEVA engine, slapstick, garbage, rubbish, utter crap, nondescript words outside, plus cigars, grabbers, plus jack stereo unit, mint condition, 1495, it's medical.
On Friday, January 17th, CITR 101.9 FM presents our annual 24 Hours of Radio Art programming, featuring innovative approaches to music and sound. It's a full day of spoken word, drone, field recordings, sound collage, thunderphonics, robocalls, voicemail fails, sound art, and noise. CITR's 24 Hours of Radio Art, January 17th. Listen live or online at CITR.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Point on CITR 101.9. We had so earlier, if you guys listened, we had a few technical difficulties, but I think we're all back now. I hope you guys.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah. So I know people have been, you know, seeing in the news with constant climate emergencies and stuff, and just, you know, climate disasters. With these climate disasters constantly showing up in the news, with oil spills in the Midwestern United States to massive fires in Australia, in the wake of these events, UBC has announced a climate emergency here, which includes moving university endowment money into the Sustainable Futures Pool, or the SFP, which is composed of low-carbon fossil fuel funds, and the request of the university administration to explore and have financial considerations for divesting the remainder of the university's main endowment pool, which is about $1.33 billion. At the forefront of this is Extinction Rebellion, as well as the climate advocacy group UBC C350, for the divestment of these funds for quite some time. However, in an effort to speed this up, Extinction Rebellion has announced a hunger strike, or had announced a hunger strike in November, if the university didn't commit to a divestment by beginning of the new year. And today marks the fourth day of their hunger strike, and unfortunately, it just seems to have no end in sight. I've seen them on campus and stuff, and they've brought in the Red Brigade, which is these people kind of dressed up in all red to symbolize, like, the earth and how it's dying and bleeding because of lots of fires and oil spills and stuff. And I think in, like, Australia, they've lost, like, what, 450 million animals, mm-hmm. and Amazon's lost, like, over 8 million square acres of, like, forest and stuff.
I mean, so what do those numbers even mean, though, you know? Like, to you?
Well, I know, like, well, I am my biologist for my major and everything, and we learn about this thing called rivet redundancy, which is basically when you have a lot of rivets in a plane, which are like the little nuts and bolts. If you lose one, it's fine. But if you lose, say, 1,000, the plane might fall apart. Right. So losing almost half a billion animals in just one fire,
yeah.
over one summer, and, you know, if you have that even a handful of times a year, that's, or not a handful of times, a handful of times a decade or something,
mm-hmm.
you might lose, you know, a third of the diversity in that area. And then to have a once in a century fire happen every other year, or
yeah.
once a decade, it becomes pretty devastating.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's not just about, like, the animals or the livestock. It's also there are people living on the land, and mm-hmm. you know, I think Indigenous people are more likely to suffer from the consequences of, like, decisions that they weren't involved in making or they weren't consulted about, and that just seems to be, like, really tragic and unfair. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to ask a bit more about the what's happening. So you said UBC declared a climate emergency?
Mm-hmm. That was back in December after the UBC C350 and Extinction Rebellion had pushed for the university to be more open about the investment of our endowment, which is basically
right,
all
our
the
endowment
money, yeah,
fund,
into fossil fuel industries, which I understand can be, you know, profitable in the short run, but they want the university to be more people-focused and not profit-focused.
So that was like, so UBC was sort of appeasing this group by, they were saying, divest from fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And then UBC was like, well, we'll declare a climate emergency.
Mm-hmm. And they've talked about doing, like, they've talked about divesting, but they've been saying that for years, and Extinction Rebellion has really pushed to have this done. Like, they want it done now. They
yeah.
want at least the university to commit to a solid plan that they're going to be held accountable to really divest and not just say we're going to do it, and then people forget over the years and they mm-hmm. just never do it.
So then what's happening now?
Now they're doing a hunger strike So basically, I think what a handful of them are not going to eat at all until the university commits.
But so, weren't they only not eating during the day or something?
That is what the university said. Extinction Rebellion has come out on their Instagram and said, no, we are definitely not eating the whole time. You know, they're taking supplements and they're having health physicians check in on the people. Okay. But yeah, for 4 days, I'm sure it's probably not super pleasant going on right now.
So it's been 4 days since UBC C350 group has
Extinction Rebellion.
Sorry, Extinction Rebellion has not eaten.
And it doesn't look like they're going to change. So far, I haven't seen anything with the president, Santa Ono, saying anything about it. So far, apparently, according to them, they haven't. He hasn't come in and checked on them or anything. They're currently hunkered down in the Alumni Center. So if you want to see them,
just beside us?
Yep. They're right there. I've seen all their stuff. So I guess if a lot of wealthy alumni come in, they're probably not going to. It's like, what are these students doing? And
are they, are they sleeping there? Or
I'm not exactly sure. I don't know what the rules are, but, you know, with, you know, being in there overnight. But at least during the day, they spend a lot of time in there.
Yeah. Yeah, unless they were granted special permission, they probably can't sleep overnight. But I guess people can check out their Instagram to figure out what's happening. Is that just easy? You just search Extinction Rebellion Vancouver?
A few. There's actually an Extinction Rebellion Vancouver, but it's also an Extinction Rebellion UBC.
Okay, yeah. So if you're interested in following the story, check out the Extinction Rebellion UBC handle on Instagram. And also the UBC's paper has done some coverage of this, and I imagine will continue to do so, and they always do great journalism. So check either online the UBC or pick up a paper around campus. That's another local free paper.
Yeah, I read that too.
But these are smaller audiences. Discorder, the UBC.
Yeah.
Still important and great though.
Right. So thank you, Zachary. And now we're going to move on to the last headline of the night. The Office of the Police Complaint Commissioner issued a media release today, January 9th, in response to the investigation on two senior VPD officers' ties to the suicide of Nicole Chan. So just to give you guys a little background on this, Constable Nicole Chan died in January last year after 9 years with the VPD amid a battle with mental health troubles and depression. Before her death, she was revealed to have been on stress leave due to her complaints about inappropriate relationships with two senior officers. Mm-hmm. So after an internal investigation conducted by the New Westminster Police Department, it was determined that Sergeant David Van Patten was in an inappropriate relationship with Chan while also serving as a human resources officer for the VPD. Does not look too good. The three allegations of discreditable conduct against Van Patten were substantiated, and this has resulted in him being ordered to be dismissed from the VPD. Van Patten is one of two Vancouver police officers who were investigated internally for their relationship with Chan, and so the other one is named Sergeant Greg McCool.
McCullough. Okay.
I'm trying.
Okay.
McCullough, who resigned from the force, but before that, he was handed a 15-day suspension in 2018. And for the 15 days, five of those days were failing to disclose to his managers a relationship, and another 10 were for entering a relationship with Nicole, knowing that she was in a vulnerable state mentally and emotionally, according to the complaint office. So, about this headline, there's really a lack of information here, to be honest. Like, from what I've been able to find, it wasn't clear what specific three allegations that were, and like I couldn't find them anywhere. And it's also interesting how there were these two senior police officers involved with Nicole Chan, and yeah, so it's just like, it's rough.
Yeah. I mean, in the context of our, you know, of Me Too and, I mean, you know, Harvey Weinstein going to trial right now, it feels like not an unusual situation, I guess. It, like you said, the press release was just issued today, and stories have just been written within the last few hours by local reporters. And so we don't know all the details. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't know what the allegations specifically are, as you said. But we do know that these were two senior officers, and the constable was below them in the hierarchy. So, I mean...
Power dynamics.
I don't know, even with the police, if it is allowed that people date within the police service, like, of different... I guess it is, because I don't know. That didn't come up as just, like, an inherent breach of policy.
Might be frowned upon.
Yeah, I mean, normally...
Well, it was described as inappropriate relationships, so
yeah.
I imagine it's definitely frowned upon, and I don't know if it's banned, but also... These two senior officers did not disclose this information.
Right,
Apparently does not disclose this information, so the police department didn't really know. But I imagine this is not, like, the... I don't want to, like, get too,
we don't know.
Accusatory, but, like, things like this do happen in the workplace, in a lot of workplaces, and that's really unfortunate that this really escalated to this point, because Nicole Chan had actually complained about... these two senior officers.
Yeah, she brought this case to the attention.
Yeah, yeah, so she herself had complained about them, but I guess there just wasn't enough done about it, and it's really unfortunate that this ended in her suicide.
It's very sad. I mean, it'll be interesting to learn the details, because even things like inappropriate relationship, what does that mean? Like, is it inappropriate because it wasn't disclosed by the men?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it inappropriate because they weren't allowed to date at all? Uh-huh. Was it dating, or was it, like, you know, some non-consensual situation?
Because her complaints and her, like, and I there's a limited amount of information on her personal mental health history, but, like, I imagine it wasn't the best situation.
Yeah.
And she wasn't really, like, having the most fun. So, that's just awful.
Yeah, it's very sad. And we'll just have to follow the story and see if more details come to light, and if it leads to any, you know, any changes in the culture of the police workplace in Vancouver.
Yeah.
One can hope. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess people just don't really think about it, because... Yeah, you see the police all the time, but you kind of forget that, you know, they have their own lives outside, and, you know, it can be distressing as a police officer and everything. And I guess, you know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, think about them, and they might have their stuff going on, stuff too.
Right.
Yeah. I also imagine in, like, a police, like, environment, it would be difficult to come forward with these kind of allegations, because. Even though we are having more women, this is, like, a more traditionally male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
And so, like, it must have been very difficult. And I imagine it's still difficult for a lot of women in the police force right now.
But totally. Yeah, especially, definitely a male-dominated sector.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Unfortunate. Anyway, that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening.
Sorry to interrupt. Can I just say one thing? I just wanted to draw attention to the fact that there is going to be a vigil held at 6, so in about 8 minutes, in the UBC AMS Nest Room 2508 for former UBC students who were tragically killed in the flight 752 flight into Iran.
It was out of Tehran into Kiev in Ukraine.
Right. So they lost their lives in that crash. So if anyone is interested in paying respects, this vigil and commemoration is being held by the UBC Muslim Students Association. So if you have time, you're on campus and you're listening right now, that is happening at 6 p.m. in, again, room 2508. Yeah.
Well,
just wanted to add that out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for adding that. Tune in next week for more Undercovered Current Affairs.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.